This is Nell. I'm reading from Gishgen's The Love Wife, page 122. Something hit the side of the car. Blondie. Was that a rock? I asked. Something on the road, maybe, said Carnegie. The car slowed. The street grew crowded. People gawked in the windows, at all of us, but especially, I felt, at me. Or was it at Wendy? For she was still crying when she wasn't sucking. I rummaged around for a pacifier. How large I felt. Larger than ever. I found a passy. She took it. I had snuggled Wendy in the sweaty valley between my thighs. My hands cradled her small, soft head, which was tied up in a red bow. Buzz cut, no soft spot. Her fontanelle had closed up. A bud mouth, with lips so red I rubbed them with a finger to see if they had been rouged. Shiny, shiny eyes. All those tears. They caught the light blackly. Her long eyelashes, clumping, gleamed too. We mostly registered the bump because it caused me to move my forearms in closer to Wendy's small body, keep her from rolling. Bump, I said softly, playfully, moving my nose in towards her as the car stopped. I was trying to establish contact without excluding Lizzie. Look, I said, that's Lizzie. That's your big sister. Wendy blinked and spat out her passy, which tumbled before we could catch it onto the car floor. She's going to stick her tongue out, said Lizzie. And Lizzie was right. Thrillingly, Wendy opened and closed her mouth several times, just as some last sun bounced in the window. I could see clear back for a moment to her tonsils. Hungry? I had wished I could nurse Wendy. Gabriella knew someone who had managed to nurse her adopted baby by stimulating her breasts with a breast pump for some months. An amazing machine, that pump, reported Gabriella. No different than what they use on cows. The friend's milk supply was never much, but the bonding... Wendy began crying again. I rummaged in the diaper bag for some formula and a bottle as Carnegie leaned towards us. He peered between the front seats, down the notch between the driver and Mr. Keon. Carnegie. The driver had hit someone. One of those tiny, wiry men in one of those ubiquitous, saggy undershirts, his blue pants cinched around his nothing waist via an overlong black belt. His baskets and shoulder pull had fallen to the ground. Now, he crouched beside them, whether out of pain or concern for his goods was hard to tell. I started to get out of the car to help him. "Please stop," said Mr. Keon. "We don't want to have an incident. Number one important point is to avoid incident. Bring a lot of trouble." "To hell with that," I said, getting out of the car. The driver also got out. To check the car, it turned out. Squatting, he ran his hand over the bumper. He spit on one spot and rubbed it, then examined it again. With characteristic alacrity, Mr. Keon got out last. Blondie. The slamming doors shook the car. "This car is made of tin," I told Wendy, even as I tried to see how badly the man was hurt. "Yes, it is. This car could be a cat food can." Wendy cried. "You're hungry, aren't you?" I said. "I can tell. Mommies know everything, you know." "They do not," said Lizzie in a stage whisper, already in league with her sister. "They do not know everything. She's just saying that." People stopped to stare at the accident and at us. I caught an occasional Mandarin sentence through my open window. "Si le ren ma? Did anyone die?" An argument began. I jiggled Wendy, looking for another pacifier. How fat she was! But with the extra creases on her upper and lower arms, she looked to have three elbows on each arm. And the texture of that fat, so silken. I rolled my window up and told Lizzie to do the same. "Also the front windows," I said. "And lock the doors, please." I worried she was going to complain that it was too hot to close the windows, but thankfully she just dove into the front seat and then back again. People began to press their faces to her window glass. Wendy cried. In the half-dark, I could hardly make out more than the gleam of eyes and teeth, but Lizzie seemed able to see fine. "What are you staring at?" she demanded, making faces at the people. She hit the glass with her hands, scaring a few away. "You are so nosy!" I found another pacifier, a different type than the first, but Wendy took this one, too. Mostly, the argument involved Mr. Keon and the driver. I couldn't follow exactly what was being said, especially with the windows up, but stiff Mr. Keon seemed to be blaming the seething driver, who in turn, between shouts, jabbed wildly in Carnegie's direction. The argument was in dialect. I wished I were not upset. My comprehension of dialect was at best a guess, but my guesses were better when I wasn't distracted. I opened a thermos to mix some formula, just glad that there were raised markings on the baby bottle so I could tell how many ounces of water I was pouring. Was I right to try the soy-based powder first? So many Chinese babies were lactose intolerant, but milk-based formula was closer to what they were used to, people said, and less constipating. I had brought both in any case, and a selection of nipples, traditional and natural, with both cross-cut and regular openings, all of which fit the special no-air bubble bottle. The moment of truth. Wendy took a suck, then spat out the nipple. Did it taste funny? Did she not like that nipple? I was considering adjustments when, funny-tasting or not, she tried again and began to drink. Happy, I watched her gulp. I stroked her fat legs. "Good for you," I cooed, then began to piece together the picture, somehow, beginning with the cigarette butt. One other section to read, starting on page... sorry, it's on page 155. It's a short section. Blondie. Actually, our baby's name was Ellison. Ellison Bailey Wong. But we called him Bailey after my family, and that was perfectly all right. More than all right, really. Here, in this airiest of spaces, I can confess that I loved it more than I would have said that my jeans were not swallowed up by Carnegie's. I had assumed that they would be, somehow, that dark would trump fair, a reasonable assumption given what I knew from paint boxes and markers. But that was wrong, and I was surprised what it meant to me not to find my blood, my side, myself, drowned out. Some would say that the point of raising children is, of course, self-replication. How hopelessly idealistic to imagine love and values might count more than genes. But truly I did. I was honestly chagrined to find in this child anything like a new order of experience. And yet, to have held his soft skull as it emerged from my body, to have felt him tugging at my breast, to have ached for him in turn, sleeping when he slept. What a unit we were. I had never known anything like it. I watched him in a different way than I had watched the girls. Maybe I would have seen him more clearly anyway, having watched other children grow up, being more practiced, better understanding his wants, for example. I saw how, even at 4 or 5 months, he pushed other people away from my breasts, something I might not have caught in Lizzie or Wendy, even if I had nursed them. But also, I watched Bailey for bits of Carnegie in myself and our families. That was new. He looked like me. He had Carnegie's tilt eyes and bridgeless nose and perfect ears. From birth, though, he had my light hair and, for a while, my blue eyes, things that somehow mattered more. He was left-handed like my father and, like my father, from birth a full sail. The more I looked at him, the more I saw bits of my grandparents and parents and all my brothers and sisters. Of course, he was Carnegie's son, too. No one forgot that. And we completely loved the girls just the same.